reveal all the salaries that I can remember in my tech career right now. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
Okay, we'll start there, and then I'll talk about what helps raising them. And I would love to hear, you don't have to reveal your salary, but I'd love to
No,
hear what
I really
you
don't. I don't care. You think I care, bro? Look at me.
I love it. Nothing to fucking lose. I love it, man. I guess this is where I do an intro. I don't know. I don't make YouTube videos anywhere. What's going on, everybody? Back by popular demand. We're doing a part two. It's Matthew Sanabria, friend, colleague, general badass. And we're going to talk about all the things that we either didn't have time to talk about last time or that were specifically requested by the seething, roiling masses of tech people out there for us to talk about. That's what we're doing.
AKA
YouTube
YouTube
comments, a terrible place to get
commenters.
your cues from.
The depths, yeah, the vile, like the depths down there. No. Yeah, there's it was really fun recording last time. We obviously were limited by time. And we might have someone join us later today as well for like a third party, which is cool. So we'll see if that ends up going through. But yeah, no, we have things to talk about, and I think one of the first ones that we should probably talk about is salary stuff, 'cause we didn't get a chance to talk anything about salary. Some people have asked about that, and I know like for most companies, review season just passed, right? Usually review seasons for most companies are like the spring and fall, usually. So like, review season just passed. Everyone's reflecting on this stuff. Salary is a taboo t subject in most places. Nobody likes to talk about it, but I think we should talk about it. And I'll ask the question, like, what's your experience been like with salary, right? Like starting your career till now, what has been your experience? How did you get your salary to go up? Like, what did you find was helpful for you when in your career?
I think that is a fantastic topic. I'm so excited that we're finally broaching the subject. Can I just say, as a like preamble to this, it's always those topics the companies, it's like the taboos. There occasionally is like value there because I mean it's just like in it's like if you're watching like I don't know like UFC or whatever, like what's
Yeah.
the stuff that's not allowed to do in the ring? Like that stuff probably works real good, you know?
Yeah.
It's
Can I break
like,
this person's arm right now? Like,
yeah.
no problem.
Oh, like, yeah. Just like bite his carotid artery, he'll die. Like, we already
Yeah.
know. Not that we're saying anyone should do that. I'm just saying, like, well, the stuff that's kind of forbidden. Not all of it, you know, but like some of it is often forbidden for because it doesn't benefit a company to have employees realize, like, oh my God, they have no idea how to pay us fairly, and they don't care, and they don't do it unless we make a whole lot of noise. And that kind of like information asymmetry, it never benefits the employees. And every once in a while, someone on the internet will roll out that old chestnut where they're like, oh, well, you know, like on my team, we all found out each other's salaries because like someone shared the wrong Excel file or something. And that actually like ruined, you know, the dynamic of the team knowing. And it's like, okay, that's like one against, and there's just hundreds of reasons for.
Yes.
So I appreciate your setup, and I'm sorry, I'm doing what I always do, which is just talk a bunch extra.
No, that's fine.
Go ahead and reveal all the salaries that I can remember in my tech career right now. Are you ready for this?
Yes.
Okay, we'll start there, and then I'll talk about what helped raising them. And I would love to hear, you don't have to reveal your salary, but I'd love to
No,
hear what
I really
you
don't. I don't care. You think I care, bro? Look at me.
I love it. Nothing to fucking lose. I love it, man. Okay, so before I got into tech, you know, it was like I made $12,000 one year as a night security guard. I made even less in the army. I did all kinds of different stuff, and I rarely made much money, but occasionally I was quite happy with some of those jobs. I did some interesting things. I was like into Chinese medicine and stuff. Yeah, occasionally got like so, you know, a very flexible lifestyle in exchange for a hell of a lot less money. But I finally realized I was actually hunting. I think I've told this story before, but I was hunting for new tech skills to learn. I was programming Python. I was like making little websites, and I was like, well, what else is cool to learn out there? So where do I look? Job ads, of course. Like they probably list a bunch of these skills together, and I'll know what to learn next. I read a bunch of these with no intent to apply, and finally I saw one that really was great. It was like a part-time internship or something. I was like, this is, I'll learn even faster. Like, this is just a means to me learning, not like to money. Went in, you know, applied, wrote a cover letter that I will share on this channel one day. It was hilarious, very long. And that's my manager, who I'm actually still friends with to this day, is like, that's why I hired you. You had a killer cover letter. Your resume was like wild and bizarre, but the cover letter sold him. So I went in.
I want to come back to that cover letter there. I'm just going to note that.
Oh,
I
yeah.
Want to come back to that like later on, because that's
get
important.
It down.
Yeah.
Went in for the interview, and you know, kind of like the rest is history. That first job I made $15 an hour first.
Yep.
And I was like, $50 an hour?
I'm rich,
yeah.
Bro.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I know. Like pulling up in the 18.
That was me.
And then from there, a couple months later, I was hired on full time. You know, it was kind of like a trial, and they were like, let's get this kid in here.
Yeah.
And it was, I believe it was $30,000. And that was like an outrageous sum to me. I had not gone to college. I had no real like prospects before this for, I mean, I didn't really seek out money, but like, it was beyond anything I'd ever made before.
Yeah.
And so I was very happy. And this is about 2000, in like the 2008 to 2010 era. And from there, I'll speed this up quite a bit, I promise. There's a lot of jobs in between. I'm famous in my family for, like, you know, my grandmother used to ask, like, every time she saw me, like, did you quit your job again? It was like, that was like, yes. The education.
It's okay. My mom cried when I quit my job at a,
it's
as
real,
a,
dude. It's
as
just
a,
like
a bagger for sure. Like a grocery store. She's like, you're going to be homeless. I'm like, no, yep. I'm not, please.
It's, but like that fear, like that is part of like everything we're talking about. I feel like today too, is like that fear is still like, even if it's not to that extent, it's like,
people, yeah,
even in our generation, like really still have that, like, oh,
it's risky.
No. Like, risk, yeah, and they vastly overestimate the risk. So from there, I worked very happily there. Then I did another totally crazy thing and quit to move to Europe and learn web development and like putz around the sort of like startup and hacking community there.
Yeah.
I was into like computer security at the time. Really interesting people. They had a couple really good, have a couple good technical universities. In Austria, and that's where I was. And I met a bunch of people, learned a bunch of things, started programming like Clojure and doing like real web development, did a little bit of consulting, worked for a couple different companies over the next several years.
Yeah.
From mostly tiny startups, and then a couple of years at a giant engineering firm, like designing data centers and looking at network diagrams and like, each of those, you know, each time I would either move way down in pay or way up, depending on,
yeah.
And usually it was like inversely proportional to how fun the place was to work at, you know? And then when I kind of, now that I'm kind of on a much more like, I came back to the US and I'm on a much more regimented kind of American career progression here.
Yeah.
When I came back, I took a job for $130,000. That was in like 2015-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an amount of money so unbelievable to me that I was like, I mean, let's pick
now
up.
I'm really rich.
This is ridiculous. I could never spend this amount of money.
And then you bought a house, and then, you know.
Yeah, like, yeah, right. Like, spoiler alert, I did figure out how to spend that amount of money. Amazing what you can do when you put your mind to it.
yes.
And then from there, I jumped probably every about between 1.5 and 2 years, between 1.5 and 2.5 years, I would jump again. And every time I got myself between 15 and 30% raises.
Yeah.
I have, you know, joining HashiCorp was obviously the last job I took. And I've been here for over 4 years. And it has been, in a way, it was like winning the startup lottery, not in like the real, it's like the working class startup lottery.
Yeah.
The shares became worth something which is better than they usually, like, I have options.
Usually they don't,
I own, they were options, not RSUs, of a company that I worked for a few years ago, and they're worth, like, a third of what they were then.
Yeah.
It's like, and I spent, I wrote a check for, like, $5,000, you know, and they're worth, like, just, like, nothing now.
But that's the risk, that's part of the risk you take, right? That's that's part of the enticement that they try to get you to join these companies. It's like, hey, you could either make out big or you get nothing.
Or we paid you slightly less than the average over years. So that ends me where I currently am. I joined HashiCorp at, I believe it was 165 base and a bunch of stock that was made up and not worth anything at the time.
Yeah.
Get into that. And then I am now at 201.
Nice. Redirect. Or what is that? No. Created? 201 created?
Yeah, right.
Leave me alone. I'm sorry. It's my fault. I've looked at code all day today.
Fucking nerd.
What a fucking nerd.
Get this guy some money.
Get him out. Get him out of here.
Yeah. So obviously, like, those shares are worth something now. And that really complicates, like, what my, as a result, my total comp has been, like, all over the place. If you do the math every year, because the stock price is always changing. I'm not going to focus on that. But, again, like, lucked out, the shares are worth something. I'm not like yacht rich, and I'm not even retirement rich. But it's a buffer. It's a buffer, and it has paid off in a way where I'm now at a place where, you know, good base salary, good benefits, and
I agree. That's kind of similar to my story in the sense of I need to pull up my LinkedIn to even remember what my jobs were.
I skipped like 7 for sure.
I'll give mine. Because, like, way back in the day when I was in high school, about to go to college, I was working for, like, a restaurant, $3.50 an hour plus tips or some stupid shit like that. And then I moved to Micro Center for a little while I was in college because it was flexible. And there I was doing, like, $16 an hour, and I was in the same boat. I was like, yo, I'm rich. $16 an hour, we're in there. Like, who wants money here? Everyone take it. And I was like, realized very quickly that $16 an hour doesn't really go as far as you thought it was when you were in high school. I went to college, got an internship where I was making about $22 an hour, and then I was like, oh shit, like, I'm really rich. I think that was like $45,000 a year.
I can't believe it. I gotta go back and complain to that. Yeah. They were massively underpaying me. Think of all the money I could have made.
Yeah, exactly. So I was getting paid that, which, what is that? Like $45,000? Yeah, something about that. And the internship turned into, that was about 2012. The internship turned into a full-time role when I graduated in 2014. And then they paid me $60,000 when I graduated. And they also paid for like a semester of my college, which was cool. So I stayed with them like a little longer. I was like, hey, I'll stay here to get you a paid my college. And then I was like, you know what? It's help desk role. I need to get out of here. I'm not growing. Right. Took a job at a startup and I knew nothing about startups. Right. I'm still a wee lad at this point. And I took a job at a startup. It went from $60,000 to $70,000. The startup went under, got laid off, found a job making $90,000 in New York City. And that was more systems engineering, right? So now, like, managing production Linux systems rather than doing help desk stuff. Moved to Florida. So, like, moved away, moved to Florida. And the job, this was back in 2017. So they didn't support remote work back then, right? That was not a time where remote work was a thing. So they were like, yeah, you can't stay working here if you're moving to Florida. I'm like, all right. So I left, went to another startup. At that time, I was making, I think, 105. I think about 105 is what I was making. Now I'm a DevOps engineer. Let's not even get started on the term, but that's what I was. I was a DevOps.
That's a whole episode's worth of complaining.
That is a whole episode's worth. We'll defer that. Making 105 on that, you know, 105,000. Then I got laid off of there because they also ran out of money. So that's two startups now that ran out of money and got laid off. Went to another place making 120. Which was great for Florida. And then, and mind you, when I got laid off from this place in Florida, I was like, I had no idea what to do. Cause right. I was rent was still due. I wasn't in a place where I was had the best safety net yet. Right. So I was like, how am I going to pay for my stuff? But instead of sitting there, you know, worrying about it all day, I just took a day, collected myself, and then started applying. Right. So got the job, got to 120K. And then when I joined HashiCorp, which is about the same time you joined HashiCorp, I made 135,000 when I first started here. But I went from an SRE role to a support engineer role because this was the start of me pivoting into software. So I kind of took a step down in title, but a slight step up in salary, and then used that time in HashiCorp. But now I'm at 182. So when I started HashiCorp, I was at 135, and now I'm at 182, which is actually like almost a $50,000 increase in what, 4.5 years?
That's wild. Yeah.
Yeah. So kind of a similar story to you, but I front loaded my job hopping earlier in my career. I did more of the job hopping earlier, and now later I kind of stay a little longer. And it's been my experience too that you get like a 10% at least jump when you leave the company. And then at HashiCorp, I got one like 10% jump in pay, I think. Everything else has been like 5% or something.
Yeah.
So it's been, I've been in the situation where leaving companies is where you're going to get more money, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Even tech companies, which pretend that they have the tech thing figured out, are notoriously terrible about actually keeping up with labor costs, which is what it is. It's not cost of living, as they love to remind us. But that's cost of labor. If someone leaves to get 30% more somewhere else, like, I guess your cost of labor just went up.
Oh, and to put some context for the viewers, since we're both at the same company and we're both software engineers, you are a level above me, right? You're L4?
Senior 2, yeah, L4.
Yeah. All right, you're L4, I'm L3, so I'm a senior software engineer. You're a senior software engineer 2, level 2. So you are one level above me. So like generally speaking, the way it works for our pay bands in general, like level, like the next level, like I'm not talking specifically about HashiCorp, but like in general, a new level of a pay band is probably like at least 10% higher salary.
Yeah.
Not even talking about geo pay or other bullshit that they might have. Just in general, a level above is about 10% more salary at least. Right.
And that, I think one thing worth mentioning here is that internally at just about every company I've ever been at, it is around the promotion is the time you are most likely to see a salary and benefit, you know, salary shares, whatever increase, like a total comp increase, commensurate with what you might, if you're lucky, get. Well, if you're lucky, it might match what you might get skipping out to another company.
Yeah, I do want to ask a question. Do you have like any like things you would have done differently, knowing what you know now? What would you have done differently when you're looking for a job to help with your compensation and salary? And mind you, like, I guess we didn't define what compensation is, right? There's a salary portion, but there's this whole other portion of like bonuses or stock grants or any other incentives. We didn't even talk about that yet. But what would you like, looking back, is there something that's like, damn, this is where I messed up and this is where I could have done better?
I think early on, I would have always negotiated harder. I came, I think like many of us, from a background of like take it or leave it. There's a million other people that are going to do this job.
Yep.
This industry is less like that. I know there's lots of software devs and tech people and Linux people and everybody out there, but like there's more positions that need to get filled than there are people. And I don't care how many people get laid off in the next recession. It's like the demand is far outstripping the supply.
Yep.
And that means that I was in a much better position even 10 years ago than I thought. And so I almost never negotiated, or I didn't negotiate hard enough. Yeah. And I think especially at the companies, you know, that you end up staying at, and of course you can't know this in advance, but you know, when you're about to work, like when I went to HashiCorp, I knew like, this is a company I want to like excel at. I want to stay here. I want to like build things that last here and like have relationships that last here.
Yeah.
And like kind of invest in the, not just my career, but my career at this company. At that point, I think negotiating hard to, it's kind of counterintuitive, but like negotiating hard to get into those companies, like obviously you get an offer, you do some pre-negotiating before you get that offer, and then you negotiate. The fear, I think, is always, oh, like, what if they just are like, fine, then like, don't come work for us. It's like, no. This company just spent $30,000 and time, which they'll never get back, interviewing you and getting you to this point. It's trivial for them to add another 10 or 15 grand or shares that are essentially not worth anything yet, or whatever, if they are a few extra shares, you know, that can, I think, really make a difference over how much money you keep over time, like how much you're able to save, especially in those early portions of your career where you're not spending all of it yet. Like, your lifestyle will inflate to, and if you're good, you can drive a wedge between that and it'll inflate more slowly.
Yeah.
But especially in those early stages, that's your best chance to save money and put it away and forget about it and let it grow over the long term. And like, that's where making more money actually has an outsized impact. Yeah. To me now, an extra 10 or 15K, it's like, I wouldn't notice it because I have a lifestyle and responsibilities and like family to support and like various things that they'll just like soak that up. And I almost don't, it's like variations on a,
yeah,
you know,
yeah. Emergencies come up, things come up that, yeah. Yeah. I get it.
Like, to me, to get that effect that an extra 20K would have early on, I'd need to make another 100K right now.
Yeah, exactly.
And for it to have that kind of like impact on my life. So in economic terms, you know, the like marginal utility of a dollar has gone way down for me. What that just means is like, negotiate hard, even when it's scary.
That was my experience. I didn't negotiate for any of my job salaries because I was always taught like, you know, be grateful you have a job. And mind you, like, you know, my mom's been working at the same place for 40 years, right? Like, it's just be happy you have a job, you're yeah. stable, blah, blah, blah. So that mindset yes. was always instilled in me. And I was also of the mindset where, oh, if I push these people, they're just going to like say, right. screw you.
It's like they're just
you.
On the edge of being like,
yeah,
oh,
yeah, yeah.
annoying
yeah.
to deal with.
But and that was my mindset. I was like, oh, yeah. if I push these people, they're just going to tell me to like go screw and I won't have an offer anymore. And that couldn't be farther from the truth. Like, now that I'm on the other side of it, I don't want to interview, right? Like I do want to expand the team and whatnot, but when I have to interview, it's a burden, right? Every interview for me is about 2 to 3 hours minimum of work for me because I have to ramp up and get your resume and stuff loaded into my head and get, you know, see what I want to ask you about, do the hour long interview and then write the feedback. So it's anywhere between 2 to 3 hours of that, right? 30 minutes
setup.
Sit
in the final discussion panel.
Oh, and then do the debrief and all that. Yeah.
And then there's 8 people in there and one engineer is always like trying to waste a day. So they're like, well, what about this like bike shedding thing that we can talk about?
Exactly.
And it's the company loses a tremendous amount of time and money on this.
Yep. So the longer a company has a job rec open and interviewing for it, the more they're losing money, right? Because they're not picking anyone, but they're wasting their engineer. I don't want to say waste, but they're spending their engineer's time interviewing people. So the engineers aren't doing work and nobody wants to keep that burn rate going, right?
Yes. So, and that engineer they need is not yet doing work that's going to make them money. So it's correct. Like a double loss kind of.
Double loss, right? You have a headcount that's missing that is lack of productivity. And like, if you were to hire that headcount today, they still wouldn't be productive until at least, you know, 30 to 60 days out, if that.
Totally.
So it's like, if you have an offer, if you're a candidate and you're sitting there and you have an offer in hand, the power is in your hand. They are literally giving you the power at that point, right? Because they don't want to interview anymore because they gave you an offer. They want to stop their interview process and wasting their salary caps. They want to get a new engineer filling the headcount so that you can start providing value. The ball's in your court. And I learned that way too late in my career. And now, like, the next job that I interview for, I know this, right? I know my worth. I know my skills. I know how what it takes to interview people. So, yeah, definitely negotiate, negotiate, negotiate. Like, don't be a dick, right? Don't come up here and be like, oh, I'm worth it. Like, don't be a dick. But push for what's yours, right? Get that up there. Start high. So that way you don't get into a situation where, like, you know, you take the role and then you find out, wow, I'm underpaid.
I have a funny story about negotiating. I once undercut an offer after it was offered and said, I will do this for less because I was so uncomfortable negotiating. I swear it is true. I was like, someone was like, I don't know, 2,300. Okay, we can do that. And I was like, no, 2,200. It's a nice round.
Final offer.
I was just like, afterwards, I was like, what did I, like, why did I do that? Like, what societal like shaping that I went through made me think that made any sense, you know?
Well, we're coming off of the taboo subject, right? Like, we're coming from that perspective. Salary or any sort of compensation discussion has been a taboo subject everywhere. They want you to believe that you can't talk about salary, when in fact There's laws to prevent you. Yeah,
you're legally, like, you're right
there's,
to
there's
do
there's
that.
Laws to protect you. Yeah. To talk about salary. And like, something I want to say is at HashiCorp, there's engineers that are no longer at the company. Like they way back in the day, they started a channel here at HashiCorp called like Talk Pay, where we talk openly about our pay, right? When those engineers left, I took over the channel and I started, you know, moderating it, if you will. And like,
you do a lot of work, and thank you for doing that.
Yeah. Doing all of that plumbing work. And basically we just talk about salary in there, right? Where there's an anonymous form where we can list our salary and our role and like share that data to help people, so that if somebody like Dave says, oh, I'm an L4 and I'm making 201. Well, then me as an L3, I know when I get promoted, I know where I can shoot for in my salary. And I know if I'm getting underpaid or not, or I can see other L3s that are also getting paid similarly to me. And I can see where I stand in them, right? It gives me information that I can use to make a decision about my career. Am I getting underpaid? Should I shoot for more? Should I leave the company, right? Should I do these things? It puts the information in the employee's hands, where traditionally all of the negotiation power from a salary perspective has been in the employer's hands once you're hired, right? Like once you're hired and on board, it's in the employer's hands at that point, right? Your raise cycles come up, very difficult to catch up to a low salary, you know, from a low salary.
Yeah, you'll never, right. You'll almost never make it up. Because that like story the business tells is always so ironclad, because guess what? They have people who have invested time in negotiating professionally because that's what they do. And they'll tell you a story and you won't realize you're negotiating for your tiny salary bump. But those people, your managers, are negotiating with you. Then when they tell you, oh yeah, it's been like a rough year like for the company, but we're just trying to hang on to everyone, that's part of the negotiation. That's not
trying
like
to, they're
a
trying
fact
to set the,
that you need to worry about.
Yep, they're trying to set the context for you so that you know what to expect and you know that you want to negotiate and push hard. But the best time to negotiate for your salary is when you're about to sign your offer letter, like before you sign on to the company. Once you're at the company,
never be easier than that. Yeah.
Yeah. Once you sign on to the company, your negotiation power drops significantly. And when you see raises, it'll be anywhere between like maybe 3 to 7% if you're lucky. Whereas leaving companies to go to new companies, you'll probably see 10% plus, right? So it's like you got to choose your story, and you got to see like what are you willing to do to get that salary increase? That's one. Also, remember, it's not only about the money, right? There is like, you can go to companies that are toxic, and you can, you know, you want to go to a company that's good, right? And not, it's not always about the money. And then like, after that, it's about just knowing where you are, knowing your worth, knowing your like being transparent with that, and seeing like what you can really negotiate and push for, because that's what's going to help bring your salary higher or lower. And also remember that jumping frequently can be seen as negative to certain companies, right? Yeah. If someone sees like, oh, you're jumping every year, they're not going to want to hire you because they think you're like a flight risk, right? Because it takes about maybe 30 to 60 days, maybe up to 90 days before an employee can start being like productive. So why would I want to hire you, wait 3 months for you to be productive, and then 9 months later you leave, right? Like, why would I want to do that?
Yeah, I think it is less true in tech than in other industries, but I agree that try to stick it out a year wherever you are, because anyone who knows engineering knows that there's like not that much. A lot of the problems you make won't catch up with you for the first year. So like seeing that you've stuck it out for a year at a place, even if it wasn't a great fit, not a red flag. And it's fine to admit that, like, yeah, this place wasn't a great fit.
Yep.
Does not subtract any imaginary points from your application. But I think as you get more senior, especially jumping quickly, that like time you should stay gets a little longer. I'm weirded out if I see like senior engineers, senior twos above staff, that kind of thing, who are spending less than 2 years at most, like their most recent jobs, because there's only so much you can do in a year, especially when you're doing the type of senior work that takes a lot of time, which is like working with a lot of different teams, coming to a consensus, designing larger systems, actually implementing those systems. It's like, if you leave after 9 months, it's like, well, none of the problems.
You didn't do anything. Yeah. You didn't see anything to complete.
Exactly. You never had to fix anything, and you never had to learn from your mistakes, because your mistakes haven't, that cycle time is just slower. You see your mistakes after 8 months, like, oh no, like we didn't put this in the design doc and now we have to solve it. It's like, that's where you do your learning.
I agree. It's tough out there, and that advice couldn't be more true, right? Keep in mind, if you're switching frequently and you're like, yo, I went to this toxic place, that's fine, right? But if you're switching frequently just to get the pay bump, you're not showing that, like, that's that sustaining value there, and you're going to make people question whether or not they want to hire you. And I was talking about salary transparency. I was looking at, so I've been looking for jobs and whatnot too. I'm always passively looking for jobs, right? I'm always interviewing, always doing that.
You should always know your worth and what's
out
there.
Yeah. I never want to be caught on my heels, right? On my back foot. I want to be always prepared, and see where the market's going. So, like, I was looking at, companies that there's websites out there like levels.fyi to show you salaries and stuff. And you should be doing your research.
We can link a few below.
Yep. You should be doing that stuff, doing your research. And companies are now starting to post salary ranges for jobs. But one company that stood out to me the most is, and I don't want to, like, you know, this is a company that I would love to work at one day, but Oxide Computer, they have a whole blog post about their salary. They pay everyone the same salary. They pay everyone $191,000 and change as of now. Basically, they've done some math and they're like, listen, we're not doing this location-based pay. We're not doing this shit. Everyone's getting paid this same amount. We're all on the equal footing. And they wrote a whole blog post about it that you can see. Very transparent, very cool. And what I like about that is it's like, it just eliminates the whole stress of negotiation or whatever. You know what you're getting into up front. And if you want to work there and be part of that, that's fine, right? It just eliminates that whole thing of like, my teammates getting paid more or less than me. That it eliminates all that. And you really start to see like a true team. I thought that was really cool. I'm not saying every company needs to do that, but when you're looking for jobs, you should look at the company's roles and see, like, is there any salary transparency here? Is there any compensation transparency? Like, what are they telling me? Because if there's not, they probably don't care, right? They probably don't care about paying you fairly, and they're probably going to try to lowball you. But if they have some sort of transparency, they probably
It means they've thought about this as like an actual thing.
Even if it's to comply with the legal regulations in like Colorado or whatever it is now.
Right. Yeah.
Even if it's just that, at least they're doing that, right? At least you have information.
Before we switch topics, I wanted to ask you one thing, and you kind of alluded to this, but like we're talking obviously about salaries, money, and like shares as your what makes up your total compensation. But obviously, there are some things that are less easy to value or a part of that that's not always apparent, and that's things like good health insurance. Various benefits like is there a 401k match? Is there a 401k match?
Shut up. God damn it. How dare
great
you?
Question to ask.
There's not a 401k sort of like, match for those asking. We don't have one. Just going to be sad about it.
and I think those things are all like very real and they're huge. I think they're harder to value. So like people focus more on salary because that's just the information you have. But also, one thing I wanted to bring up was like, as I was listing my job experiences, I was thinking, wow, like I made almost no money at, you know, this startup X, let's say, but man, I learned so much and it was actually so good. So like, how do you truly value that extra like learning? And I think that's like maybe for another time, like to really discuss that in depth, like are there any like signals you can find during the interview that are like,
I think that's a good topic I would love to hear what people have to say and ask questions about it. And we should probably live stream these at some point in our future. We should probably talk about that so we can get live questions and stuff. I'd love to go into that after people ask us questions about that, of those things, so we can focus it. But yeah, you're right. It's not just the compensation, right? It's, am I exposed to the right technologies that are going to better my career? Yeah. Am I going to grow as an engineer? Right? Cause that's valuable. And that's what I did when I went from my help desk job to my first Linux admin job. I was exposed to so much, even though I got laid off from that because the company like, you know, lost money and went under. Even though I got laid off from that, I learned so much and I became a far better engineer in those 11 months than I did in the 2+ years that I was at the previous place.
Yeah.
Right. So there's something to be said about that. And it's everything. It's your salary. It's your stock. It's your insurance. It's the experience you're going to get. It's the people that you're working with, because it's a network aspect to it now, right? Like I know these people, and now as they move on to their companies, I will know them from that one company that I worked with them, and I can talk to them like, hey, you're at Google now. Can I, you know, what's up? And you know, it's all of that combined that really paints the picture of, and it's also your work-life balance, right? Like, are you going to have the ability to have a good work-life balance? All of that has to come together for each individual person and you have to make the decision, right? Yep. There's been times where I was, while I'm at HashiCorp, I got offered money to go to other places, more money. And I was like, nah, I'm not going there. I don't want to commute to New York. That's going to ruin my work-life balance, right? Like, I don't care if you're paying me more money. You're not paying me enough to warrant that.
That's right. It's
so it's like, it's all of that.
What it is. I agree. And I think one of the reasons we're talking about salaries, because it's, that is the clearest metric in all of this. So it's the one that kind of gets managed the most. But like, a lot of what you're saying is so much more important than salary after a certain minimum is hit of salary. But it's also incredibly hard to see in anything except for hindsight. It's like, you don't know. It's really hard to tell if a team, like, there's some easy ways to tell if a team is toxic, but after you've eliminated those, it's like, it's still a crapshoot.
It's still a crapshoot. So, you're always rolling the dice. And like, the younger you are too, you have different responsibilities. Yeah. You might be like, oh, I don't care about the insurance. I'm single. I pay $0. Great. But if you have a baby or if you get married, you're paying now. You have a family now. So that's like, I don't know, like hundreds of dollars out of your check now.
Yeah.
That's the compensation
risks,
thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And the risks, I think that's a good way to kind of sum this up, is like, take what we said, you know, use it if it's useful. And remember that like the risks you can take when you're young aren't necessarily greater, but they're just different from the types of risks you can take when you're older. So the types of risks you can do when you're young is like negotiate like crazy, like target companies that are going to teach you the most because you don't need that much money yet. You know, be flexible, use that flexibility to your advantage, like move around if you need to. Like a great time to, you know, work for like Google in an office is when you're young, because the commute doesn't kill you, no matter what stupid like things they have. Not that they're stupid, they're wonderful.
Yeah. But, no, you know, I get what you're saying. You don't have a family that have to like, go home to.
I'm not
going to
stay an hour from the restaurant and the massage chair if I have like a kid at home. You know, I'm sorry. Yeah.
I agree.
It's just a different quality of risk. Take those when you're young and figure out what is the right risk for you to take now. And then when you're older, it's like, great. Now you have a different kind of pool of resources. You're making more money. You can invest a lot more money. Even though you have like less time or flexibility, it's like you have another kind of resource you can use to take other kinds of risks. And, you know, everything has its season kind of. So,
agreed. And don't be afraid to take those risks. I know so many people that are like, but I have this job. If I leave, oh my God. And they're afraid. Don't be afraid. You learn. I mean, like, I don't want to say don't be afraid, because it's okay to be afraid, but do it anyway, right? Like, do it anyway.
You learn so much about. You should feel the fear and do it anyway.
Yes.
Nothing against my book or anything.
No, I mean, it's true. Like, I don't want to say, you know, oh, just get over it and do it. Like, I know there's real risks involved and real things to weigh. But you learn so much about yourself and you grow so much when you're tossed into the fire and you feel the burn, right? Or if you jump into the water and you feel like, oh, it's actually not that cold, right?
It's
like
what
when
makes you learn. That's what I first made.
Yeah, yeah. When you're in it, you learn. Yep, you learn. So just, I don't know, don't be like, oh, I have to hold on to this safe, stable job. There's opportunity. Like think about leaving sometimes. Think about what it takes to jump ship and go somewhere else and challenge yourself, right? You'll be surprised at how your body and mind reacts to that. You just kind of do it, right? It's weird. It's like the bird being pushed out of the nest.
Yep.
You just fly, right? It just works.
That's it.
So don't be afraid to let it work.
What better note to end on than that? It's fucking such a cheese ball. I'm like, party time.
Hey, let's go, Justin. Get in. Yeah.
We're talking about salaries and learning and growth. Welcome back, Justin.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back. I actually just finished up the y'all's last episode. I was wanted to make sure I heard it before I joined, right?
Amazing.
But I was super stoked to see it when it went out, right? Like you know, two of my favorite folks here at HashiCorp. So I'm happy to be here chatting with you. What are we talking about? What have y'all been talking about?
Well, we've been talking about salary, things of that nature, and we actually just hit that for like an hour, but there was a second topic that we wanted to cover, and that is someone asked a very interesting question. Matthew, you have that in front of you?
Yep. So Mark Lopez asked, I think more videos on what you expect from the junior people, what kind of attributes make a new person on the team successful? So they want to know more about like, how do we as more experienced engineers view juniors? What do we want them to give? You know, what do we want juniors to bring to the table? So that's what we're going to talk about next.
Love that question. Lopez, you're all right in my book.
Hell yeah.
You already have what it takes just by asking that question, I can tell. It's like right attitude.
Yeah. I agree. So since Justin is the new one on the call right now, what do you think, Justin? Like, if looking back when you were a junior and looking back to now where you are, what do you think is the best? Like, what attributes do you think make a good junior engineer?
Sure. And just, I guess, to set the context for anyone who might not know me, which I assume is pretty much everybody. So to sort of set the context here, I came up sort of through support, right? So like I was very entry-level support at the beginning of my career, worked up through support engineering, senior support engineering, and now I'm a community manager. And I think that for me, the thing that I would look for in someone who's a little bit more junior than me is to ask questions, sort of exactly what you were just touching on, and something that y'all mentioned last time as well is you know, not being afraid to ask when you're out of your depths, but at the same time, taking some time to actually like try first, right? So like a lot of times I'd have people come to me and just be like, "Hey, I got this weird error message. What do I do?" And it's like, okay, what have you looked at the logs? Have you looked at, you know, like, you know, have you tried to poke around the code base a little bit? Like those kinds of things. Like, dude, have you looked, right? Like, give me something. Give me an idea of where you're at so I can meet you there, right? Because like, if someone comes to me and they ask me a question and they're just sort of like, what do, like, where do I start, right? It's sort of that, what's your level of knowledge around this particular question? What have you already tried, right? Because I may not know the answer either. And if you tell me, well, I've tried this, this, and this, then it gives me a sort of starting line, right? Where I don't have to go hit all those basics. Versus if you come to me with nothing, then like, I'm going to start at zero and go from there. So I think asking questions and asking informed questions is really important.
Love it. I'm keeping track of these so that I can run down the list at the end and be like, did we miss anything? Because I think this is such a good topic.
Do you want to answer or do you want me to answer?
Go first, yeah.
Okay. I agree with you. Asking questions is like the number one thing I want from like a more junior engineer. I never really liked the term junior engineer because like I'm a senior engineer, but like I'm junior in other fields, right? Like if you think about it, if you move me to machine learning, I don't know anything about that, right? I'm a junior there. So I never really liked the term. But when you have new people on the team that are like less experienced, especially maybe early career engineers, I want them to be communicating, right? I want them to be talking and asking those questions, but not empty-handed questions, like you said. So I won't go too much of that. I echo everything you said. But the only thing that I would add is I want them to speak up when they see something that seems off or that they don't understand. And it's not necessarily like asking a question when a bug comes up. It's like, hey, I did this in the code. I don't understand how this is working. Can you explain it to me? I want to see them trying to broaden their systems level knowledge of like the system that we're working on, right? And asking the questions of like, hey, this doesn't feel right. What's going on here? And pointing those things out, because the more experience you get with something, you kind of start to take certain things for granted and you kind of like gloss over them. But someone that's new to it, they are experiencing it for the first time. And I want their feedback. I want to be like, how does this feel from someone that has never used this before? Do you hate it? Do you love it? Like, what's the rough edges? Because I gloss over the rough edges all the time, right? Because I've dealt with them, so I don't think about them anymore. But how do you, as the new person, how do you feel? Because I think that's valuable. And I love when people bring that up, because the people that I have on my team that do bring that stuff up always leads to really good discussions, really good documentation, and sometimes it leads to like bugs. Like, oh crap, that shouldn't be doing that. That's a bug. Let's go fix it. So I love that.
That's great. The reason I wanted you to go first is because what I have to say is the final word. No, it's because you just brought up some really interesting points. The junior versus senior thing, I think, is such a great distinction to make. In fact, I heard you make that distinction a couple of years ago, and I think I even referenced it in a few videos after that because it made such an impression on me. The idea that like we're all juniors in some like things, it was just like driven home to me by one of my really good friends, actually maybe my best friend, the person I started this channel 4, who watched one video and was like, eh, I don't know if Linux is for me, which, like, that's fine.
Bastard!
Son of a... Yeah, no. But he randomly, years later, just got, like, he became a Windows admin. Go figure. And...
Loser. No, I'm just kidding.
I was a Windows admin, too. It's okay. this is a safe space for everyone. He went and got obsessed with ZFS. He was just, like, he found ZFS somewhere, and he was like, this is the best thing I have ever seen. And he read all the docs, and he set up, he was already, like, kind of into the hardware side, and, like had a server rack at home, and that kind of, like, infrastructure admin person. And he became kind of like a little bit of a ZFS, like, ops expert in the span of, like, a couple wild ass weekends, I guess. And I remember I had introduced him to ZFS originally. I was like, you should look at ZFS. This does a lot of, like, what might solve your problem. And, like, 2 weeks later, he came to me and taught me 50 new things I had never known ZFS could do or, like, even experimented with. And he had, like, done it. And he, like, he had, you know, put some data in and then, like, pulled a drive, like, randomly out of the enclosure and just been like, does it re-silver? You know, it was just wild to see. And it drove home this point, I think, which you made, which is so valuable, which is, it's not about, yes, part of being a senior is you have a huge giant database of, like, shit you've seen and shit you've worked with and shit that's blown up in your face. Then that makes you very good at, like, having intuition around what to do, how to build something, what not to do. And yes, that's part of what we get paid for, but also brings home this, like, distinction about what makes good engineering is actually not about all the knowledge you have. It's about the engineering process you have. Like, how do you go about solving problems? And a very good junior can be much better at this than some seniors I've seen, because they just have the right process. And I think that's some of the things you've both mentioned are, like, about that process. It's like, do you try to build context around a problem before just, like, crying about not being able to solve it? It's like, well, yeah, no one is able to solve this problem off the bat. That's normal. That's step zero. Like, step one is, like, build context, do some research, read through, like, some basic docs. Do you have a misunderstanding about how this thing is even supposed to work? Like, work from there. This process is, like, kind of what's important. I'll let y'all chime in on that before I go off on, like, a huge other tangent about something else. But yeah.
Justin, have anything to add?
You know, I had something that came to mind a minute ago, but thank you, ADHD. It has left my brain.
More my fault than your fault, I'm afraid. Once I get started, man.
Yeah, no, but I totally agree. I mirror everything that y'all said as well. You know, like the question saying that, like, I really appreciate the sort of distinction that both of you made in terms of, like, being senior about in specific areas, right? Like, I think that one of the things that I picked up on a lot when I was still in support was that, I had gotten to a point right around the time that Matthew and you joined, where, like, I knew how Terraform worked, right? Like, I know how to do that kind of thing, but there were still aspects of what I was supporting Terraform Enterprise at the time that, like, I didn't have any knowledge in, and that Matthew helped me a ton in all those things, and sort of helped to build me up in that. And so, you know, that's sort of allowed me to pass that on to other people as well. And I had a point with this, but I guess what I'm getting at is I totally agree. Like, I think that, like, everyone has their, like, sort of niche that is, like, particularly interesting to them, that they become, like, sort of the person for.
When I joined your team, I had never used Terraform Cloud before or Terraform Enterprise. I used Terraform, right? The open source CLI. I used that before, but I had this, like, set of knowledge for Linux that came along with me. So when I was on your team, like, I saw there was a gap on Terraform Enterprise knowledge because one of our people left at that time, right, that was doing it and whatnot. So I was like, you know what, let's dive in. And I just started tinkering, right? Like Dave was saying with his friend with the ZFS, I just started tinkering. I read the docs and congratulations, I'm the expert now, right? Like, that's kind of how it worked here. That's kind of how it works in the field. You dive into something, you read the docs, you tinker with it a little bit, you find out things, you break it, you fix it, and suddenly you turn from this junior engineer to the expert on that thing that you just read about. Because the sad truth is that nobody's reading the doc, and, like, if you are the first person to read the docs, you're the expert now. Like, it's just, it's crazy how that works. So, like, to all the people that are in the junior roles now, just get going. read the docs for the thing that you're working on, tinker a little bit, and you'll be surprised how quickly that turns you into being an expert on that thing, because people will start asking questions and you'll be like, oh, I know this. I know the answer. And you can start chiming in and having those discussions. And then your knowledge just starts to grow, and then you own it. And then sad things happen, but whatever.
I'm going to jump in here because the fleeting thought that I had came back to me. Yeah. And perfect. It's what you just mentioned again, Matthew, of the sort of, or maybe not again, but earlier you talked about a junior person coming in and asking questions about things that just don't seem right, or like calling something out that's like, hey, this just seems kind of weird to me. And I think there have been plenty of times, and I imagine all of our careers, where you came into something, you looked at something, you're like, this seems like counterintuitive, or like maybe it's just a documentation issue or something, like something's not right here and I'm not getting it. And then you bring it up, and whoever you're talking to about it, who is the senior person in this role, goes like, huh, you're right, there is something wrong here. Or like, you know, we've just been kind of doing that because like that's just how it works, right? And I never really gave it a second thought. And so I think that second pair of eyes, or you know, fresh set of eyes, if you will, is really beneficial. And so going back to the origin of the question, right, of like what do you look for in a junior engineer, I think that like that sort of calling that kind of a thing out is super valuable and should be encouraged.
I love that. That's because it's the second thing I jotted down, and I swear I jotted it down. I'm not just a hanger on here. I depend on all my friends for ideas. I wanted to expand that because one of the things I was thinking of, this kind of like less experienced in general, less experienced on the team, more experienced in general, more experienced on the team. In these dimensions, one of the most incredible like kind of value adds I've seen very inexperienced, generally, people bring to a team is, in addition to finding like code smells or like things like that, process smells are huge. And I have actually seen, and it wasn't me going on a team and being like, I think this all sucks. It was someone coming in who was more junior than anyone else on the team, in the kind of like general technical experience sense. And within like 2 weeks, she's great. I should actually interview her here. Within 2 weeks, she just had the kind of like courage and honesty to be like, hey, like how we do kind of all this process around this is like, it doesn't make sense to me. Can you like explain? In fact, she being who she is was just kind of like, this seems bad. Does anyone have an opinion? And I was just like, damn, like she just... Yeah, like, but she's right. Like, this is bad. And all the seniors, you know, it's like you have so much experience, you can just kind of like adapt to shitty processes or shitty ways of like planning or designing or building software. And you're like, hey, like, we'll make it work. And you do make it work, but it's not optimal. And I think when you're new, and it's also even if you're senior and very experienced and new to a team, that's the time before you like acclimate to how things are just done and it will happen. That's the time to just like, is there stuff we could make better? Is there stuff that doesn't make sense? Is there stuff that seems suboptimal? And then again, like also with a caveat, kind of like some of the stuff Justin was saying earlier, don't like, you can do this too much. You can be the person who comes in, doesn't understand a damn thing, and then is like, this is all bad. And like, I read that we should do this differently. That's not what anyone wants or needs. But if you come in and like constructively and somewhat critically ask questions about some of the fundamental things that are happening, that can be very useful. At the very least, that's your training, right? Like you're getting trained on why things are done this way. And it helps everyone else to have to explain it because you're basically a rubber duck for like, you know, finding bugs in the sort of code that runs the company. Just a thought.
That reminds me, because you said like about these processes that are in place that are bad, they're getting called out. I was reading the staff engineer book, right? Oh yeah, I'll put it on the camera.
You can read.
I can read. It's a new skill that I am working on over the summer. No, I've been reading that, and they mention a line. I was trying to find the page, but I read. But they mention a line of, don't just implement these processes just for process sake. Sometimes a conversation with your engineering team or a specific person on your engineering team can like eliminate the need for a new process that is just shitty. You know, and that was like, I'm paraphrasing, but that's what they were saying. Like sometimes just talking to your engineers and seeing like, how do you feel about this thing, can just eliminate the need for a process that is going to make everyone pissed off, you know?
Yeah, I think sort of like an interesting thing, very like topical for me, right? Because like I'm doing some things right now, process related on the team that I work with now, and something that I've had to learn very recently, actually. Maybe I should have already known this, but was that this idea of sort of like if you pitch something, like you're trying to change a process, you don't like it, you think it's bad, or whatever. You pitch something and it's not immediately accepted. Because like no, this is the way we're doing it, it's working fine just now. Like maybe take a step back and reflect on how you like pitched that, right? Like I came into this particular thing that I'm trying to do, and I was just like, hey, the process we're doing right now, it's not efficient enough. We need to change it. We need to change everything. And of course, everyone in the room was like, whoa, you know, like put on their back heels, right? But when I came back with it, and I actually just went and wrote like a mini RFC on this, right, and gave it to them, and I listed out my thoughts on it. And I sort of started it with like, okay, why don't we do this? Let's do a very incremental change, and then we can increment it slowly and make like feel it out. Let's see how these things go to make this process better, because clearly this process could be better, but we don't want to just throw everything in the trash. Yeah, and that was accepted a lot, more sort of people were more, you know, amenable to it. So I think that like that's something to like not get discouraged about if you do come into a role in more of a junior thing and you pitch this idea of we need to change this. And it's not immediately just like, oh yeah, you're right, you're totally right. Let's throw everything. Our
That would
processes
also
are
be like a
terrible.
team smell. It's like, wait, it's like doing what the new guy wants. Like that leads to just like we rewrite the product once a year every time someone joins. That things make it better.
I mean, you bring up a really good point about like your communication, right? As part of being a good engineer, senior, junior, whatever, is your communication with others. And I've struggled with my communication as well. And your written communication specifically, right? Like verbal, fine, but most of our communication in this field is going to be written, right? Pull request reviews, the code itself, emails, Slack messages, whatever it may be. It's most of our communication is going to be written. So really being able to articulate your ideas and your thoughts in writing is super important. There's been so many, I mean, you're a community manager, Justin, so you've seen GitHub issues. This doesn't work. Submit.
Oh yeah.
You gave me nothing to go off of. When like your written communications, your chance to like share that context with people, say, hey, like I'm doing this. Here's my config. Here's what I'm thinking is happening. Like, describe what's going on, not just for bugs, but even for changes. Hey, here's the gaps in our process. Here's what I would like to do to address them, blah, blah, blah. And you'll see how people can accept that communication much better than when you say, like, this sucks, let's change it. You know, and it's true. It's something I've struggled with too. And I'm sure everyone else struggled with it, but it's one of the biggest things that helped me grow as well. I was gonna, did you have another point that you wanted to cover? I'm looking at you with
I
your
just, I
little
didn't want to
eyes.
jump ahead of Justin. I saw you were unmuted, so I didn't want to like cut you off.
Oh, I was staying unmuted just in case anyone told a joke. I wanted to, you know, help the homies and laugh, you know. I'm not trying to laugh on mute.
Really are earning those $10 checks the channel sends out.
Wait, you're getting paid? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. That's right. Should have negotiated, man. I don't know.
Wait,
What are you
you're
talking about?
the hell's going on?
That's cool. I love these. I'm gonna kind of read off the things we discuss. Okay. Senior and junior dev relations, and specifically what we like to see from newer people on a team. Do your research, ask good questions, and add context. The whole discussion of the terms junior versus senior, I like kind of reshaping that. That's actually just a more useful and intricate way of thinking about it, like better abstraction. Speaking up regarding rough edges in the code, in the process, in like what we get paid to do every day, whatever that is. Oh yeah, one thing I really loved, finding a gap. Who mentioned that? I thought that was great. Finding and filling a gap on the team to kind of build expertise in. I thought that was so cool.
I think
It
we both
does
kind of
happen
like
naturally.
hinted at that. Yeah.
I think that's a real value add a junior can bring. You know, many eyes make bugs shallow, like we've all heard it, but it's like a lot of teams are always just stretched a little bit thin. There's not enough, you know, devs are expensive. Like that's what we just talked about in the first half. How to make yourself more expensive. And the idea is like if you find a gap in expertise on a team somewhere, that's a great chance to become a kind of reliable senior on the team, even if it's just in that part of the system. You know, it's like it's not, and there's a lot of like contenders for like skills that are pretty high percentage hits for this. You want to do like learn some networking. You'll probably be the only one who's good at networking on the team. Learn SQL.
Can I nod like harder for the networking yeah. one? Because like every problem is a networking problem at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Sorry. I just, I'm going to, I'm
breaking my neck. Any kind of domain specific, like SQL and how databases work, like database indexing and how to actually do it, like more than one fielder, you know, like just beyond the basics, like a weekend of study will make you better than like 90% of devs who are just focused on learning other stuff. And they're huge value adds potentially. If you're thinking of like future resume writing things you're going to do, it's like made the entire system 80% faster by removing like, you know,
one database setting or like something. Yeah.
Read or something. Yeah, exactly. It's like you can make a huge impact with these things on the product, on the team. And it's just, it's rare that anyone else is like competing in that like space on the team. Are there any other skills you guys can think of that are like that?
I mean, I think the one thing that keeps coming to mind for me as you're talking about this, that I don't know, maybe we've sort of touched on this a little bit, but just getting good at reading and researching, right? Like whenever, harkening back to the team that, that Matthew and I were on together, I had a lot of people in that, you know, I came in as a senior support engineer for that role, but so much of what people would come to me and they'd ask me questions and then I'd give them like really thorough response. And they'd be like, wow, like, how do you know all this stuff? And it's like, I just go and I read, you know what I mean? Like I got an error message. I saw where the line was in the code. I went to the code. I read the code to see what it was doing there. And then, you know, what it was supposed to be doing and what it got and what it was not doing. Right. And just, I just read it and taking the time to just do that more and more. I got better and better at it. Right. Like I'm not a software engineer by trade, you know, like I've never been in a software engineering role, but I read a lot of code. And I read a lot of the reference for it, and that has gotten me to the point that I can sort of break down these complex things.
Out here, giving the cheat code to everyone on YouTube, like that's
literally it.
If you that's do it. That, like that's it.
You read the docs, you read the code, you're done. Congratulations, you are in the 99th percentile of engineers, and it's almost sad to say that, but that is the reality. You do that, you jump up ahead in skill. And to extend that, like debugging, right? Not just reading, but like that's part of like reading the code and stuff is part of your overall debugging skill. And if you can get that up, you'll be a fantastic engineer, right? You will move, you'll be faster at debugging the code. You'll be faster at getting to the core of the issue, at whittling down context. So I want to say debugging as the skill. And then I think I mentioned it last time, but like just being comfortable with your tools and being fast, right? There's nothing worse than being slow with your tools or slow typing or slow this, and then you lose that context, right? If you're in that flow state, there's nothing worse than being pulled out of that flow state. So kind of being quick with certain things is going to help you in the long run.
Love it.
Yeah. Anyone have anything else to add? I have one last thing to add if nobody else has something to add.
Go for it. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. I mean, being a junior engineer or senior engineer, I think if you are a junior engineer that's aspiring to move in, like to get your promotion and go to the senior engineer route, my advice is to start thinking more about the team, right? Like the code is the least important part of our job. Like, I'm not gonna lie to you. Coding is the least important part. It's about solving business problems and framing it and all of that, right? That's what we do.
The code it's required is just, though, by the way. So like I know some senior engineers, not at this company, but like yeah. You have to be good at writing code. That's
for sure.
Okay.
For sure. It's just that as you become more senior, the code becomes the smaller part of your job, the least important part. It's more about framing the problems, addressing them, yada, yada. But the biggest thing I see from going from a junior to senior eng is it's less about your impact and more about the team's impact. So instead of like, oh, Matt wrote this code today, it's, oh, Matt wrote this RFC to enable the team to write the code. And like, that's where you can pivot from junior to senior, is just showing more of an impact outside yourself and to the team in the whole, right? So that's my little ender, my conclusion.
I just like that you called it an ender. It's like some kind of like
Ender's game,
like Tekken
or something. Yeah, that's my ender.
Like rip the guy apart. I don't know.
Finish him.
Mega kill. I don't know. Wow, showing my age here. UT99 for life, people. Yeah, that's a great point. I love that we've talked about all these things. I think they're like, this is just a gold mine, and especially getting three different perspectives together. I think it'll probably be instructive to people to see what we all agree on and like what these like common points are that we all kind of express from different perspectives. Thank you both for being here and doing this, and maybe we'll do another one of these soon because they're
cool
fun and useful.
Yeah, thanks for having me back. I promise next time I'll wear a different shirt, or maybe I won't. Maybe I'll just
no,
keep
no,
up with
no,
this.
No.
You're wearing the same shirt.
Don't
you're
break
fine.
The streak. What do you? Yeah. You keep having good like talks when you're wearing this one. You got to keep wearing it.
Exactly.
It's the lucky shirt, man.
As always, please leave questions, comments, and requests for future topics in the comments below. We'll read them. Can you guys just like hear my dog barking and my wife?
Not at all. Nope. I can't hear anything.
That's amazing because it's all I can hear. cool. See y'all in the next one. Peace, everybody. Thanks.
See y'all. Bye. Recording in progress.
You feel like with all the technological advancement they've made, it would feel like you could get a better, or you could just have someone record it for 12 cents who already works for you and then just use that.
I know. Yeah. You could just say like recording on something,
yeah.
Something
yeah.
Elevator
yeah.
Music-esque, not this
yes.
Like robotic crap.
I want to be spoken to like I'm getting into like a TIE fighter. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, like recording like, engage and
like
as
what you just said, exactly, like as the guy, exactly right.